Welcome to the Revital Health Podcast, where we explore the exciting intersection of modern science, ancestral wisdom, and personalized health optimization. I'm your host, Jodi DeVal, naturopath, integrative medicine expert, and founder of Revital Health Clinic in Perth, Western Australia. Each episode, we'll dive deep into cutting-edge therapies, groundbreaking research, and practical strategies to help you live your best life, having plenty of fun along the way. Whether you're keen to supercharge your energy, balance your hormones, or discover the latest biohacking trends, you've come to the right place. If you love what you hear, don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow so you never miss a moment with world-leading experts and game-changing insights. It's time to unlock your full health potential. Let's go! We acknowledge that the Revital Health Podcast is recorded on the unceded lands of the Whadjuk Noongar people of the Noongar Nation, Borloo. We recognise their continuing connection to land, waters and culture and pay our respects to Noongar elders past and present. Welcome back, everyone. Today, I am joined by Daniel and Jay, co-founders of In Rhythm, for a fascinating conversation about one of the most powerful yet frequently overlooked influences on human health, light. Light is not simply something that allows us to see. It is a biological information system that helps regulate our internal clocks, sleep-wake cycle, nervous system, hormones, appetite, metabolism, immune function, and cellular repair. In this episode, Daniel and Jay share the deeply personal experiences that led them into the fields of chronobiology, circadian health, and biological coherent environments. Daniel discusses his experience of profound circadian disruption, technology addiction, and declining physical and mental health during adolescence, while Jay shares his journey with severe psoriasis and the changes he experienced after aligning his lifestyle more closely with natural light and dark cycles. We explore how modern indoor lighting, screen exposure, flicker, and bright artificial light at night can interfere with a body's sense of time. We also discuss why children may be particularly sensitive to evening light, how our light environment can influence sleep and behavior, and why supporting circadian biology needs to come and become a foundational part of family health. Daniel and Jay take us through their practical lighter framework, covering morning light, UVA, UVB exposure, evening light, reducing artificial light at night, earthing, and regular early meal timings. We also discuss skin health, sunlight exposure, appetite regulation, habit stacking, and In Rhythm's vision for creating homes, schools, workplaces, and healthcare environments that work with human biology rather than against it. This is an incredibly practical conversation about reconnecting with nature's rhythms while continuing to live within the realities of our modern world. Let's get into it.
Jay, it is a pleasure to have you here. And we are here to talk about In Rhythm and all about chronobiology, which is one of my most favorite subjects to talk about.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much. Looking forward to it.
All right. So I always start with our stories, why we landed in this work, because I think it's really important for us to, for the audience, for the listeners, for the watchers, to understand, you know, the passion behind the project. And this is always the most rich part, I think, of the podcast, is hearing the personal stories. So for both of you, why land here? Why light? Why biological rhythms?
Yeah, sure. So if I kick off, it's quite a linear story. My journey into this world began probably quite a while before Jay, should we say. I think it's useful for the listeners to know that I'm 32 years old now, and I'm pretty good health. Wasn't always this way though. From the age of about 12 or 13 until 16, I was what I like to call the poster boy for circadian rhythm disruption, for, you know, disrupted chronobiology. I was one of the first children that I knew, or teenagers that I knew, that was really, really deeply addicted to technology and video games, and was spending like increasingly longer periods of time throughout my early teenage years in front of screens and exposed to tons and tons of the wrong types of light late into the night, you know, sleeping super late, barely making it into school over months and eventually years, putting on tons and tons of weight, becoming very disturbed mentally, having a lot of anxiety and depression, at times suffering even from suicidality. My life was really so upside down, you know, sleeping all day, awake all night. My diet as a result, it was terrible, you know, wasn't exercising, my relationships with my family, my friends, my ambitions at school were not so astute at that time, because of all of these challenges. And really at the root core of that, as I came to learn over a decade later, was this mismatch, my relationship with nature and these light and dark periods, which was fundamental in terms of like the breakdown of my health. And I went on a just over 10-year decade through degrees in nutrition, studied psychology, studied functional medicine, and began to put that story together and the pieces of the puzzle. And it wasn't really until I discovered the world of chronobiology and then photobiology, the impact of light as medicine, that, you know, over a decade after that happened, I really felt like I was able to come into myself really in my wholest sense. And over the last 7 or 8 years that I've been in this industry, not only have I worked with, you know, tens of thousands of people through variety of educational programs and philanthropic efforts that we've run online, conducted research in schools, trying to kind of pay it forward to the younger generations, who now we know are all, you know, majority of people are suffering of all ages really from mismatched chronobiology and many of the challenges that I experienced a long time ago. And so yeah, that's a little bit of the background of my story. And then I met this wonderful man. I say next to us because he is next to me on the screen. I met Jay around about 15 months ago, which is, I'll let him take it from here, but around the time that his journey into chronobiology began.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. Look, my journey into circadian health is very different to Dan's, but I'm very glad we've ended up on the same path. My professional background was in AI and finance. I had a history of very high growth, high flying jobs and careers in industries that were extremely demanding, a lot of pressure, very long working hours, and generally pretty unhealthy lifestyles, even though I didn't know it at the time. And actually, this had really been the case my whole life. Didn't quite know it, but, you know, constantly pushing, constantly striving, academics, sports, you name it. It was just more. And, you know, the human body can put up with this for a while, but not forever. And during my last job before In Rhythm, I was working at an AI startup based in London, and I developed very sudden and very aggressive autoimmune psoriasis. So psoriasis is a very common autoimmune skin condition. It results in itchy, burning plaques on the skin. And it is common, a lot of people have it, but I had an extremely aggressive case for it that developed very, very quickly, exponentially so, and never really let up. And so I went on a journey of trying to find healing, which initially started with a Western doctor, an allopathic doctor, like most of us do, who very candidly told me that there was no cure and that I had psoriasis, effectively stuck the label on my chest, said, "You've got psoriasis, too bad." And so that then kickstarted a much longer journey into alternative medicine, into holistic practices, into diet and Ayurveda and Chinese medicine and many, many other different forms of holistic medicine, in this eternal quest for healing, right? Even to just sleep comfortably through the night was impossible for me at the time. And so none of these things really helped. Nothing really lasted until that fateful day where I met Dan at a cafe in London, and Dan tells me about quantum biology, he tells me about circadian rhythms, and he sends me down the rabbit hole, and I research as much as I can and have this moment of, oh my gosh, I think this is going to work, this makes complete sense. And I put into practice the circadian a set of circadian interventions that I had understood from podcasts and reading, and also that I had crystallized from Dan's philanthropic project, the Circadian Rhythm Disruption Challenge, which very succinctly and beautifully lays out some of the key interventions that you should make in changing your relationship to light. And once I did, I watched in disbelief as psoriasis disappeared every single day, day on day, for about 6 weeks. Not just psoriasis cleared up, but chronic allergies that I used to have cleared up, gut issues that I used to have cleared up, muscular issues that I used to have cleared up. So pretty much everything that was wrong, quote unquote, with my body, or areas in which my body was out of balance, quite quickly came back to balance. And so I got back in touch with Dan and said, look, there's something amazing here, and let's bring it to the world.
Incredible. I absolutely love this. And I think it's just so pertinent for people out there who are suffering with any amount of disease or health condition, that they know that there is things that can support them. And I think it's the hope that's in that, you know, and it's the realization that there is other options. Like you say, if you're living in it, you don't know if it's not giving you the best health that you can, and you don't even know what it feels like sometimes. Like, my biggest mission with my clients and patients is to give them the feeling of being addicted to being healthy. You know, it's something that we don't actually understand until we feel better and then better and then better. It's like, whoa, that is incredible. You know, I call it the laws of being human. And you know, it's, we've lost it. We are in very, very fake environments, and we can't help it. And this is the thing, I think a lot of people, especially clients coming to me when I'm trying to get them to and convince them to change, and when they're reading the books, it's like, well, you know, I can't change my work. I can't, you know, step outside and work outside. I can't turn my work off at nighttime. That's when I work, you know. So it's about fitting all of this into the modern day. And that's what I love about the products, the programs, you know, like In Rhythm, and there's so many doing the work in this in terms of that chronobiological, that shift and the change and the prescriptions. And Dan, I was saying to Jay off camera or off recording that every client of mine gets a light prescription. And so, you know, we have globes here, I'm getting your globes in, you know, we've had you know, other companies, I try and seek out the best, and then Olivia pointed me in your direction, and then so that's how we've connected. And it's just a beautiful circle of everyone trying to elevate and support people's health. And this is why I just love talking and sharing and connecting. It's like we all have this amazing mission of supporting people just to get better, you know, elevate the human condition, which is just so cool. All right. So I have a few questions. Why products? So why light bulbs, firstly? Because I know you have a new product out. I want to start there, actually, because I want to give a solution and to talk about a product first. So tell me a little bit more about this low flicker, and why is your bulb different to what we might normally see on the shop shelves? And what are we looking for in terms of these environments that we're sitting in daily or living in our house? And, you know, what are we trying to change here? What is happening to our body?
I might just, Dan is really well placed to answer this question. I might just start with a very quick framing of why environments are actually even important in case people aren't aware of that. But fundamentally, our health paradigm that, you know, most people live under is fundamentally based on the principle of doing more, right? Where it views health as this thing that you have to force, or you have to achieve, or you have to, you know, I've got to do the supplements and the medications and the exercise routines and the diets and the Shilajit and the Ashwagandha and the et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? And all of these things have their place for sure. But what if we could reframe health not as something that we do or have to achieve, but something that emerges naturally when the right environmental conditions are created for the organism? Okay. And it's a little bit helpful here to step outside of the realms of human biology for a second and think about animals and broader ecosystem biology. Because whenever you're thinking about the health, lifespan, and well-being of any organism, you would always consider the environment in which it lives. You would always think about life expectancy in captivity versus in the wild. You would always think about, you know, conditions like light, temperature, social construct, social ecology, when you're thinking about the health of an organism. Well, guess what? Human beings are no different. We evolved over millions of years in the natural environment. And it's only been in the last 150 years where we've developed electricity and we've completely moved indoors. Therefore, in a very, very short space of time, the human organism has become completely disconnected from the natural environment in which it evolved. And if we look at other animals, what happens if you take a fish out of the ocean and you put it in a tank, right? What happens if you take a higher mammal, like a tiger, out of its territory and into a zoo? These animals start to break down psychologically and physiologically, right? They may live longer in captivity because they don't have predators and they have access to medicines, but the quality of life goes down. And doesn't that sound a little bit familiar to the human condition that we're currently faced with as a society? So environment is very, very important. We can't separate it from health. But what is it about the environment specifically that actually impacts health? And this is what the circadian science looks to research and to answer. And it turns out that the most important cue in the environment for the functioning of the human organism is light. Okay, light is the predominant Zeitgeber that gives your body a sense of time and allows your body to function normally. So this is why we started with light. And I'll hand over to Dan to tell a little bit more about the lighting architecture that we have.
Yeah, thank you, Jay. And that's a really good way to set pace. I guess like another thing to consider and think about is that, as Jody mentioned before, so many people do not have choice and agency around their behaviours. And in particular, the time that they spend in certain places. Now, I think we could all argue that, you know, as you begin to feel the benefits of more time outdoors and more time in a natural environment, you tend to be able to prioritize more time there. And, you know, maybe you can make shifts that previously you thought that you couldn't, or, you know, that were going to be difficult. But the reality is that, you know, we live indoors, and I don't think we'd like to go back to living outdoors. And so it's really important that we construct environments indoors which are conducive to health. And so this science, circadian biology, is not new. You know, the Nobel Prize for circadian medicine was given quite recently, but the discovery of the suprachiasmatic nucleus, or that orchestrate of our circadian rhythms, the master clock in the brain, was made decades and decades and decades ago. But it takes a long time, as we know, with medicine and science to catch up. And, you know, more recently in the last decade, there's been a plethora of research into the impact of light on health. But it's really been concerned with a couple of what I would call quite reductionist metrics. It's been, you know, largely focused on this idea of blue light, and blue light being a stimulus for wakefulness, and also on what we call lux, or luminosity, or brightness of light. And they're very important features. You know, when we look outdoors and we look at what's happening in nature from the time that the sun rises until the time that the sun sets, the qualities of light from the sun are constantly changing. Things are getting much, much brighter from dawn, or pre-dawn, all the way to midday. And then from midday all the way to sunset, things are getting much dimmer and much kind of darker, much, much warmer, as we say, in terms of the light spectrum. And this is what our chronobiology, or our biological clock, responds to. But we went into a laboratory and we said, okay, so, you know, what we know is that this is a very scientific human thing to do, right? We isolate, you know, specific areas of health and well-being. You know, what nutrient in food causes this effect? And we take it into a laboratory and we want to do a double-blinded placebo-controlled trial where we can prove that this exact one, you know, micro aspect of our life causes all of this stuff. And so they're like, okay, we found the wavelength of light, you know, 480 nanometers, and this stimulates the circadian rhythm, it wakes us up. And so also, brightness has an effect, and we can measure that with something we call lux. And then we can start to run experiments of what happens if you blast this person with this amount of brightness of this wavelength of light at this time of the day, and you measure these outcomes. And so, you know, that's led to a plethora of very bright lighting that stimulates us and keeps us awake. And we've got these, you know, seasonal affective disorder lamps and light boxes and all these sorts of things. And we have a lot of education around, you know, time spent outdoors for circadian health. But what we failed to appreciate is there are so many more aspects of light than just, you know, these blue wavelengths and just the brightness. You know, there's such a thing as flicker. So if you look at a fire at night, you know, you see the flicker of the flame. Okay. Well, flicker also exists within our indoor lighting. But it's something that we can't consciously perceive. In fact, because of the electrical frequencies from which our light sources run, the light can be turning off, you know, anywhere between 50 and 60 times per second, on and off, on and off, on and off, causing this flicker effect that you might see if you perhaps, you know, record a television screen or you record some sort of lighting, you watch a video back and it slows down and you can see this flicker, but your brain can't perceive it. In nature, you know, the only flicker we are exposed to from our light sources, as I mentioned, is firelight. It's very slow, it's very calming, very relaxing. But the lights we've invented and we brought indoors are quite literally, you know, stimulating our nervous systems beyond belief. Also, what we call the spectrum of light, so that quite literally means the combination of the different colors or wavelengths and the intensities of those wavelengths, you know, was very predictable in nature. Every day, things start off very red, very amber, very warm. They get much what we call cooler and brighter, and we get more of what we call the blue light over the course of the day, which wakes us up and stimulates us. And then it's like clockwork again from noon until sunset, the opposite direction. But the problem is we've invented types of lighting indoors, these, you know, cold white LED lights, things that, you know, are used, the chips that are used in our mobile phones, our laptops, our computers, our televisions, quite literally the lights all over our homes, our schools, our offices, you know, our institutions, our supermarkets, our gyms, everywhere you go, we're exposed to these types of light, which they don't mimic what's happening outdoors. And so they contain enough of the brightness and enough of the blue light to stimulate us and to wake us up, and actually to kind of overstimulate us, right? Lead to too much stress hormones running through the body, too much cortisol, too much adrenaline, and they keep our body and brain perpetually stuck in noon mode, because the amount of blue light and the brightness of that light a lot of the time is kind of tricking the body into thinking that it's a middle of the day light stimulus. But there are so many elements missing from that light, which unfortunately are impacting our biology in so many ways, from you know, the impact it has on our cells and on our mitochondria, to our stress response, to our nervous system, and also the timing of our circadian rhythm, and the circadian rhythm being this like master orchestrator of all of the cells, the systems and the organs in the body. So there isn't a single, you know, disease state out there or a single symptom you're experiencing that isn't made better when your body's sense of time is better regulated, because repair and healing and restoration happens so well when it is. What we started to do, we started to think about, you know, what are these missing elements of light? So infrared light is a big one, right? Infrared light present in all natural light sources, firelight, sunlight, also the early light sources, incandescent bulbs and halogen bulbs, contained a lot of this infrared light, and very healing, penetrates very deeply into the body, beyond just the surface of the skin, and has many beneficial biological effects. We said, you know, okay, so outdoors there's no flicker, so what happens if we create a light source that has no flicker? Bring the infrared back in, and then we started to think, well, you know, what if we created a light source which mimics nature in terms of the amount of, you know, blue light and other wavelengths over the course of the day? What happens if we quite literally try to, like, physiologically recreate as well as we can with modern technology what's happening outdoors and bring it indoors? And the results are quite miraculous. To be honest, I like to think that this is like one of the simplest, lowest hanging fruit, right? Something that you can just make a change to on a simple level, you know, changing some bulbs or some lights in your home, your kitchen, your bathroom, your lounge, your bedroom most especially, and bringing that light environment indoors in alignment with what's happening outdoors to remove the barriers that impede your body and your nervous system from winding down at the right time of day, from sleeping deeply, from waking up feeling refreshed, alert, rejuvenated, which ultimately makes, you know, all the other changes that we're prescribing patients and friends and family members to improve their health, to get addicted to being healthy, much easier. So yes, the long and the short of it is that we have released a version 1 product at the minute, which we call the Better Sleep Bulb. designed for better sleep, as the name suggests. But we're also working on, you know, a variety of other products, fixtures, fittings, because our end goal, you know, ultimately is to see like the institutionalization of new lighting infrastructure, which can make, you know, health simpler for everybody in society, just as simple as, you know, flicking a switch with the right light.
Yeah. And so, as you say, it's a relatively short period of time that we've had, you know, the toxins, the light, which I call a toxin as well, you know, the Alan at nighttime. Alan's naughty at night. So, you know, you don't want these things. And it has been such a short period of time that the human has now had to learn to adapt to, which we haven't quite gotten there yet. And I think this is why we are seeing so many health conditions, as you say, coming through. We are seeing things that are out of control, and increasingly this psychoneuroimmunology, you know, all of the internal nervous system, rhythm, immune. We've had COVID interrupt all of this. We've had, you know, 5G, and we've had EMF now, which is constantly stimulating the nervous system and keeping us unsafe, the flicker, as you say. So, you know, it's the inputs of all the areas of the body that it's sensing. We are in a really unsafe point in time for our bodies to feel like there is settling. So, as you say, Dan, it's something that is so little but is so achievable to actually change some of these habits in our daily lives. And it can be really fun, and you notice how different you feel, you know. So for years now I've been doing it. It takes a while to convince clients. I was lucky enough to know a brand really early on, so I got into the red light glasses, and you know, I've been doing the globes. I've got the red light when I shower, and it's all red light when I bath. And my kids are also, you know, "Mom, turn the light off. It's too bright. I need to go to sleep. It's going to wake me up." They've got their cute little red glasses on, and yeah. So yeah, a big part, you know, and this is where I want to go to next quickly, is children, because a big passion of mine is, you know, the next generation coming through, and we're teaching them. And as you said earlier, Dan and Jay, that, you know, in the schools we now have computers at year four. I know that's in Australia. You know, winter time, you have even countries, I lived in London too, you know, you got this low light, you know, for a, you know, some part of the year. You know, sometimes it's sunny in London, but not as often maybe as Australia and the US. But we generally have a little bit of the timeline of that we're needing to have dark, and we're in a modern world, so then we're lighting up our lives after dark. And this is all appetite regulation, and you know, changes in ghrelin and leptin. And we, you know, those who are into light biology are learning all of this. And also Jack Cruz is a sort of a leader in this sort of place, which I love that he's bringing this to the modern doctor, I guess, or practitioner. But with kids, what I'm seeing is a huge uprise in you know, behavioral issues, should I say. I'm trying to be politically correct here. Behavioral issues, and also insomnia. I never saw this 15 years ago in clinical practice. Insomnia in children? Are you kidding me? They're tired. They go to bed, like, straight out. But what we've seen is now is the phones, the iPads, they're in the rooms with the children, and they're three or younger. They've got Apple Watches. Like, are you kidding me? It's insane. So I get on my high horse a lot about this, but, you know, for parents out there, what would you guys be advising? What should they be doing in regards to their children's light environment?
Yeah, so I think I'd love to just reflect on some of the things that you shared there. Yeah, you know, my experience of my teenage years when I had insomnia, and I wouldn't call it insomnia really, I had like a very delayed phase of my circadian rhythm. I didn't struggle to get to sleep, it was when I was going to get to sleep, you know. But children are so sensitive, and the research is really clear that the younger that they are, the more sensitive they are, especially to light, in terms of like the development of the pupil and the iris and things like that. And there's some really good research showing that children can have their melatonin suppressed by anywhere up to like 98% if you're exposed to the wrong types of light before bedtime. You know, I've got a daughter, she's 6 years old. Me and her mother aren't partnered, we're not together. And like when she comes over to my home, as you like mentioned, you know, red light, screens, you know, filters on screens. You know, and just want to make it clear, like, it's not that I never let her go on the television, I never let her watch anything, but it's, I'm really aware of, you know, the brightness of the screen, the colors coming from the screen, what I can do to filter that screen. You know, as you alluded to, like, you know, red lights, amber lights, you know, I actually obviously I'm slightly biased towards our Better Sleep bulb now because the color rendering of it is much better. So one of the problems my child has had, my daughter, is that we used to do like coloring books and things like that in the evenings, and she would be there like, I can't see things. You know, if you have a strict kind of like, you know, isolated wavelength red light, which has been all the, you know, the biohacking circadian space for the last decade, has been, you know, just red light. But the truth is we need light sources that are closer to nature, and that's what we're making now, so you can see things and you can see color better and you don't lose the ability to differentiate color. But these simple, you know, tools, and I don't even want to call them hacks, they're just fundamental, you know, changes that we can make to the environment on behalf of our children. The younger you are, the less control they have over these things. Once you become a teenager, you know, you might be wrestling your kid to wear a pair of blue blocking glasses. It doesn't sound like you're wrestling your children. But, you know, an example, when I went into the schools to do this big research project, I took blue light blocking glasses, the kind of amber red lens, into 7 different schools in the Channel Islands, 500 different kids. You know, we gave these glasses out, we gave them circadian health education, taught them about getting sunlight before school in the morning, taught them about filtering screens, you know, eating their dinner earlier, all these sorts of things. You obviously had a large percentage of kids that looked at me like I was some sort of quack, crazy, you know, I'm not going to come off TikTok or games consoles or whatever. And I think maybe if you had told me at that age, I probably would have done the same. But there was a huge number of these kids, teenagers, coming back to me and being like, wow, this stuff really works. Like, you know, I'm not feeling so anxious, I'm not feeling so stressed. And I think that one of the really interesting things about, you know, having worked with a lot of families and having worked with a lot of children, having a child myself, is that children are very curious. If you ask them the right questions, you know, if you tell them to do things, they tend to fight back. In fact, adults do that as well. I don't know if you've noticed. But if you pique their curiosity and you ask the right questions, you know, well, how did that make you feel when we did this thing the other night? Or, you know, what happened when we made that screen? You know, we filtered that screen and we used a blue light filtering app and we took that out, but we still watched, you know, I'm sad to say, Peppa Pig for an hour or whatever before bedtime. Oh, yeah, we fell asleep easier. We woke up feeling happier. And the impacts on metabolism, on mood, on behavior. I mean, I know for a fact that when my daughter's at home, and let's just say that her home environment, where she spends the majority of her time, is not as diligent when it comes to their light environment, that things like mood, behavior, appetite are wildly dysregulated. But yeah, even just starting simple, you know, some filters for, you know, the iPhones or the iPads or the tablets that we're using, and turning lights down, making things dimmer, using lights that are like below eye level at night time, swapping out a few bulbs for kind of, you know, red or amber, blue light free bulbs, or better yet, you know, the Better Sleep bulb. And also like taking children outdoors into nature more, you know, playing outside, doing homework outside, eating, you know, lunch and breakfast outside. That the great thing about a lot of these habits is that, you know, fundamentally as adults, you need them as well. So if you can program into your family, and if you can, you know, direct more of your family's behavior in the way that you connect and relate to each other and things like that to the outdoors, then you're instilling like a resonance, a memory, a connection, that even if your child reaches teenage years and wants to rebel and, you know, screw you, mum and dad, and I'm not doing what you say, and I'm going to sit inside and play the video games, they've had that experience of being outdoors and are feeling well, and, you know, they can and they will, as I did, come back to nature when the time is right. So I think that the best thing that we can do for ourselves and for all of our families really is to think about and make these simple changes. You know, people often say, oh, it's another expense, you know, another thing, like, oh, 6 light bulbs from you cost me how much? And we often say to people, think about this, you know, over the course of a year, the cost of 6 light bulbs from our website is like 35 cents a day. Would you pay 35 cents a day over the course of the year for your entire family to sleep better? And, you know, by the way, those bulbs last for 25,000 hours, which is like years and years and years and years and years of usage. Whereas we spend a lot of money on supplements, we spend a lot of money on the latest health gadgets and all of these crazes. But to be able to pick apart and understand what are the fundamentals, and light, you know, being one of them, and so many of the behaviors being free.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that you say the outdoors and just do as much as you can outdoors. It's just so important. I from the age of 12, I lived in a stable, and so I from yeah until I was 17. So I rode horses, and my dad asked me, which he probably shouldn't have, "Do you want a house, Joe, on the property, or do you want stables for your horses?" And I went, "Stables for sure, let's go." And so I got so used to being outdoors, I literally slept in the middle of the stable alleyway. And I loved it. It was the best adventure, sometimes even sleeping on my horse's back in the middle of the night. But what I got then, then I went into uni, and then I went straight to London. And I lived in an apartment in London, and I was so claustrophobic. I would crawl onto the roof. We had like a roof ladder, crawl onto the roof, even in the coldest days, and just try and get up there and be like, sunshine. So now we've got this beautiful deck that the kids, every single morning, I'm straight up out of bed and outside, and I'm shuffling everyone outside. I've got a 10 and a 14-year-old. And we all eat outside, we all exercise outside, we've got beautiful grass to enjoy. But I don't, and when I then talk to clients, I realize how stark of a difference we actually are living in for the majority of people. I'm like, "Well, have you been outside yet today?" And they're like, "Yeah, I came outside, got in my car, and came to see you in the appointment." I'm like, "It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Have you not been outside yet?" I'm like, "What? No, I haven't." I'm like, "How can you even cope with that? I'm just so claustrophobic inside." And these are the problems, So from some of the simplest things that I've had, especially with children, as you say, Dan, it's like they're so sensitive that parents will come to me and say, "I've got this chronic behavioral and sleep issues. They're tired. They don't want to go to bed. Give me all the supplements. Give me the things that I need to give them to make them go to bed." I'm like, of course, supplements will support if they are deficient in it. And some of these things, but the biggest action points and the movers and groovers are the things that first morning sunlight that I find, and then reducing that melatonin decrease at nighttime with lighting. And within a week, all the parents come back to me and say, "Wow, that my child is sleeping. Like, what have you done?" I'm like, "You've made those changes. It's not hard, it's almost free to be able to do those changes. We just don't get taught this. It's ridiculous." So yeah, and I love, interchangeable globes. So easy. You just turn it on at whatever time of the day it is, and let's just go. It's so perfect. So the next thing I really love to talk about in terms of light environment is our skin health. And I think it's just the elephant in the room, in most cases with sunshine, especially in places like Australia that have high UV. Now, I have most clients coming to see me with vitamin D deficiency, even those that are outside all day. Sunscreen maybe not great for vitamin D absorption. And I know it's not about vitamin D, this podcast, but it's about light exposure. And so, we know that you said this earlier, Dan, this 12 o'clock perpetual time, this midday, this noon that we're always in, is the body trying to protect itself. These melanopsin receptors, we've got light receptors all over our skin, and then we go into at nighttime, when we go into this bright overhead light, the body thinks it's still 12 o'clock in the middle of the day. So what about skin then? Talk to us about skin and the repercussions of poor lighting on skin and health conditions.
Maybe this would be an interesting time for Jay to talk a little bit first to his personal experience of, the changes that he made, and then maybe we can back it up with a little bit of the science on top of that, so that it's
Awesome.
Relatable before it's too too deep down the
Too
science
heavy.
dogma.
Yeah,
Absolutely. And I know
sure.
you mentioned it already, Jay, but would love to hear more about this, because so many people suffer with skin conditions.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, skin conditions can really, really take over your life, right? They can be not only physically painful and stressful, but they can make you feel socially awkward and out of place and embarrassed, and it can affect your careers, your love life, and pretty much anything. So I really do sympathize with anyone going through skin issues at the moment. But you should know that there is hope, more than hope. There's, healing. Healing is possible when it comes to skin issues and many of these other chronic issues that we suffer with. So in my case, I was suffering from very severe psoriasis, as I mentioned. And broadly, the circadian interventions that I put in place were really about changing my approach to light, both natural light and artificial light, right? So when it came to natural light, it was very much changing my perspective towards thinking of light like food. Okay, so just how you would say, oh, I need to get my fiber or X grams of protein or X, you know, vegetables in my diet, you have to switch that or add to that the light diet, right? Which you were talking about a little bit earlier, Jody, which you know, you should be saying to yourself, ah, I need to go out and get my UVA. I need to go out and get my UVB. Now is the time, right? And there's a very helpful app called the My Circadian app that can help people understand when those times of day are. And so following the circadian, living a circadially aligned life will bring down chronic inflammation in the body. It will regulate your nervous system, which in turn will regulate your immune system, which is where a lot of the, let's say, dysregulation and unbalance is happening in an autoimmune condition like psoriasis or other autoimmune skin conditions. But what I didn't realize at the time is actually how important was the timing of these circadian health interventions. Because when my skin was very sensitive, right, when psoriasis was in full flare, I actually couldn't be outside in UVB light, in harsh UVB light. It was too painful for my skin. Because when you have skin that has been damaged by psoriasis, actually the skin itself loses its ability to deal with UVB light properly, right? And actually, properly functioning skin with, you know, properly functioning melanin actually reflects a lot of UVB light. It doesn't actually allow that, you know, the full strength of the UVB rays into your skin, right? So it has this very protective property. And makes use of that UVB light in a better way. But I actually couldn't do that, right, off the bat. And there will be many people with severe skin issues who can't do that either. So what do? You actually have to start with morning light, right? Because morning light, before UV ultraviolet light comes out, is rich in infrared light, which we can't see, but constitutes most of sunlight, and visible light, which allows us to see. And this skin and this this light has a ton of healing properties for your skin, too many to enumerate here. But specifically, why the timing was important, because this kind of early morning sun exposure preps your skin to actually deal with the later wavelengths of UVA and UVB. Because if you think about how ancestral humans would have been exposed to light way back in the day, they would have been exposed to light sequentially through the day, right? Starting from morning into late morning into afternoon and then evening again. But guess what? What do in our modern life? We spend our entire lives in offices, in artificially lit offices, and then we go to Ibiza on holiday and we're like, 30 degrees, hit me. Right? Super unnatural thing to do. And then we get burned and we layer up on sunscreen and we think the sun is dangerous. It's like, how can the thing that has given life to everything on earth forever be toxic, right? Yes, you should respect sunlight. Yes, you should not overexpose to sunlight. You should avoid burning, right? All of these things are true. But it's our relationship to sunlight that is wrong. Not sunlight in and of itself. What does an animal do if it gets too much sun? Have you seen? It goes and sits in the shade, right? Crazy concept, right? It doesn't lather. We just lather more sunscreen on and just say, you know, hit me harder. Well, guess what? That's not a natural way to deal with sunlight. So, how I'd summarize this is, you know, for skin issues, inflammatory related skin issues, circadian interventions are so incredibly impactful and so quickly impactful. The return on investment, this is the inner finance guy coming out, the return on investment of circadian interventions is the ROI is higher than you'll ever see on any kind of medical intervention, particularly with things like sleep. It will change overnight. So I'd highly encourage anyone dealing with skin issues to explore circadian interventions. Be mindful of the timing. It's very, very important to prep the skin to actually deal with UV light and get the most out of it, which is actually particularly important in a disease like psoriasis, which is UVB sensitive. Even clinical practice will prescribe UVB phototherapy for psoriasis. And then ultimately make sure that you respect the sun as an ally and a friend, not something to be afraid of, but a very powerful friend who you need to make sure that you relate with in an appropriate way.
Yeah, I love that. I call it the building the solar callus. And I think clients relate to that because they're like, oh yeah, like I need to when I'm doing my weights, I build a nice callus. It's like over time that I build this callus.
Exactly. And that's what the morning light does, right? Over time, I would, I started with only morning light, and then I would be able to extend that slowly, slowly, slowly until I could be outside, you know, in the sun for most of the day, because I had successfully built up, as you say, a solar callus, which is your skin's ability to actually deal with sunlight. And look, it's important to also be conscious of your skin type, right? On the Fitzpatrick scale, from the sort of, you know, the fairest end up to the darker side. My ancestry is Indian by background, so I'm a little bit darker than Dan. So I can tolerate, you know, naturally just a bit more sunlight. Look, just something to be aware of when dealing with sunlight.
Here, look, my heritage is Irish, you see. So technically my family are very pale, but I've built myself a very strong solar callus. And another way to say solar callus is, you know, a healthy tan, essentially. Love everything that Jay was sharing there. I think it's really, really practical wisdom. Just a couple of the scientific sort of insights I would share on top of that is that your skin, every skin cell that you have has a circadian clock within it that regulates, you know, healing and repair of those cells. So not only is it about getting the right inputs, as Jay mentioned, you know, infrared light and ultraviolet light, helping to regulate the mitochondria, provide energy, provide healing, provide restoration, develop melanin, which can help us to become more tolerant of the higher UVB, certainly the UVA as well, and allow us to actually better utilize those wavelengths of light for the benefits for our immune system and our neurological health and, you know, even our sexual hormonal health, all of these things. But also, like, when we shine the wrong type of light on our skin at the wrong time of day, it disrupts the circadian biology, the healing 24-hour, you know, cell turnover mechanism, basically. So another reason why it's so important to have healthy lighting indoors, and, you know, a shout out to the kind of solutions that we're bringing, is because we want to bring that infrared light back into the indoor environment. We essentially want to create an indoor environment that is similar to, like, living underneath the canopy. You know, our ancestors wouldn't have spent all of their time outdoors in very bright UV light. They would have gone out, you know, they would have done their hunting and gathering, especially in the earlier part of the day and the later part of the day, again, depending on where you live, the latitude. Because if you're Irish or Scottish, you were probably outside all day trying to get as much light as possible, even in the summer, because the UV index is a lot lower. But when we talk about, you know, living close to the equator, And you know, Australia and Australians are a beautiful example of this, because there's this deep, like, evolutionary mismatch, right? You know, the white Australian, who's probably not pale white, very, very tan for the majority of Australians because of the UV over there, didn't come from Australia, you know, emigrated from Northern Europe the majority of the time. And so, you know, Aboriginal cultures and the same in New Zealand, like the Maori cultures, you know, much, much darker skin. Their ancestry came from those areas where there was a lot higher UV round the clock. And so we need to be aware of our skin type, and it's really important. But back to this idea of indoor environments, you know, what we want, what we would have been doing for a lot of the day, you know, no matter your skin type really, is spending time underneath the canopy where you're getting a lot of infrared light. There's enough visible light to see, but you're not in that direct UV light, because UV light, you know, at the wrong dose can become phototoxic. A sunburn is not necessarily good for us. You know, if we spend too much time in intense UV light all of the time, and, you know, we can experience aging of the skin and such like that. But when we restore those infrared wavelengths inside, and we reduce the higher energy visible wavelengths of light, not even just the UV, but also some of the shorter wavelength blue light, which is so, so abundant in our screens, our laptops, our televisions, our cool LEDs, and then we improve skin health that way as well, because we're sending the skin cells, just as we're sending the eye clock and the brain, the right signals to tell it what time of day it is, so that it can heal, so that it can repair. And unfortunately, the types of lights that we bathe ourselves in and the lack of light that we bathe ourselves under outdoors is a terrible mismatch that results in, you know, the mistiming of those mechanisms for healing and the increase in inflammation. So really, really, really important. And then I think something that would be useful maybe is just to encapsulate, you know, in a paragraph or in a minute, the prescription, the light RX that we give people. We developed a lovely little acronym. It started off, I'll explain the core principles of it, is it spells out light and begins with light, L, light first thing in the morning. So that, you know, that sunrise light, if you can get it or as close to sunrise as possible, sets the circadian rhythm, allows the infrared and the red light, depending on where you are at the latitude, you know, getting that on your full body, your skin, not just through your eyes, is really, really beneficial, especially when it comes to skin health. And then the eye of light is include UVA. So Jay alluded to this app, which we back 100%. It's called My Circadian App, and it shows you the different phases of sunlight across the course of the day when certain types of light, such as UVA and UVB, appear and disappear. And so you want to get a good period of time again outdoors, you know, unfiltered light exposure to UVA, and that begins the mechanisms, especially through the eye, that allow your skin to develop resistance or a more of a symbiotic relationship with the stronger light that comes later, which is UVB light. And that's the third letter of the acronym light is gather UVB. So getting some UVB on our skin. And then the H is harnessing evening light. So just as we get morning sunlight, the natural evening light is like the timing mechanism at the other end of the day that's telling our brain, oh, it's time to wind down, time to begin to produce more melatonin, which is this master antioxidant, anti-aging, you know, hormonal chemical that we produce not only in our brain, but also in our skin and in all the cells of our mitochondria, in fact, that help us to repair and restore. And then the T of light is turning off that dreaded guy Alan, you know, turning off this artificial light at night. And I think, you know, Alan gets a bad rap. I think some types of Alan are okay, they're better, you know, like the artificial light at night from the Better Sleep bulb, it's a lot dimmer, a lot warmer, has no blue light, has no green light, you know, really respects firelight, essentially is made to as closely as possible mimic the light of the fire, which is very soothing and nourishing. But the types of artificial light at night, which we colloquially term Alan, you know, the very bright blue lights, the unfiltered screen, the laptops, the televisions, those need to go. And when you get this timing right, the cadence from, you know, morning to night, and you take each step in the light acronym, and as you mentioned, you know, within days, certainly weeks and then months, everything stabilizes, and all of those other changes we begin to make for our health, our nutrition, our exercise, our meditation routines, you know, all of those things, our stress resiliency, all of the things improve, and you can force magnify the efforts that you're making everywhere else. Don't make things harder for yourself, make things lighter for yourself.
We do actually have an extended version of that protocol called Lighter, right? Where we add an E, we add an E and the R at the end, and I'll share it just because it's very impactful, and certainly was in my case for psoriasis. Well, the E is earthing or grounding, which means connecting your body with a natural surface, walking barefoot on the grass, on the beach, that kind of thing. In particular, I found swimming in the sea was such a phenomenal game changer for psoriasis. You know, a day at the beach, in and out of the sea, you're getting your light, you're getting your grounding. It's absolutely fantastic. There's minerals in the ocean that will also support skin health. Earthing, and if you can in water, is a fantastic thing to do. And then the last one is the R, standing for regular early meal timings. Okay, and this was an interesting one for me, because I feel like I had picked up on this one before I was even aware of circadian information, not just because it's often talked about in not just, you know, modern nutritional science, but Ayurveda and Chinese medicine, and basically any holistic ancient practice you talk about always talks about eating earlier, right? Finishing your last meal at least 3 hours before you sleep, and therefore left shifting all of your meal time so that they're just earlier in the day within a defined window if you can. So we suggest 10 hours, a 10-hour eating window. This is sometimes called intermittent fasting. these days, but ultimately regularity of meal timings, right? And the awareness that when you eat is as important at times as what you eat, right? And I think I had understood this intuitively just by looking at how my body responded to particularly late night eating, where it really, really used to get inflamed. As it's a very important part of this protocol, of course, the timing of meals is arguably the second most important zeitgeber when it comes to the circadian timekeeping system behind light. I'd really advocate for those suffering with skin issues that we consider the timing of their meals also.
Yeah, and just one thing I'd love to throw in there is, again, like this habit stacking thing, you know, we begin to eat, you know, our light, sorry, we eat our last meal outdoors around the time of sunset as a family in the garden. We go back indoors, we, you know, have all the artificial lights turned off, we wind down easier, we fall asleep quicker, we then naturally wake up earlier, we naturally begin to feel hungry earlier, we go outside and we have our breakfast outside, you know, we put our feet on the earth at the same time, we're, you know, in and out of having our breakfast meal, you know, at lunchtime we go outside and we try and eat outdoors, we get our feet on the grass again. You know, it's not all of these seemingly separate like habits that are going to cause all this extra time, I've got to find time to do all these extra things. Well, no, what if we, you know, like you said, or alluded to, Jodie, we eat outdoors, you know, we spend time outdoors, we take our calls outdoors, we do our homework outdoors, we play outdoors, and you know, all of these sorts of things. And I think it can feel a little bit overwhelming to people to begin with, and what I actually kind of like to reverse, I hadn't thought about this yet, I don't think we've talked about it in this way, but like actually reversing that lighter acronym and beginning with, like, you know, a little bit of an earlier dinner, turning that artificial light off, and maybe trying a little bit of grounding, you know, in the evening or in the daytime. Those three things can like shift your nervous system to begin to wind down quicker, and then you find it so much easier to wake up and get that early morning sunlight. You feel so much more hungry in the morning because you're not eating later at night. The problem is, a lot of people would say to me, I can't possibly imagine eating breakfast, you know, I've been skipping breakfast for years and years. Well, you know, when you're going to bed at 11, 12 o'clock, you know, even 10:30, and you're having your meal at like 8:30, 9 p.m., you're going to bed with tons of food in your stomach. You know, talk about ghrelin, talk about leptin. All these hormones are so dysregulated. When you wake up in the morning, I back then, I couldn't think of anything worse than eating first thing in the morning. But if you begin to peel that dinner backwards, you know, the timing of it backwards, peel away that artificial light at night, do these practices such as, you know, earthing and grounding to regulate your nervous system in the later part of the day, to bring those stress hormones down, start to get to sleep easier, then like clockwork, before you know it, you couldn't imagine living life the other way. You know, I intermittent fasted for years and years and years and years. It became a very unhealthy obsession for mine. And we like to say, you know, in terms of circadian eating window, which might mean that, you know, in the summer you've got more of a window to eat because it's brighter and lighter, and you know, the sun's up earlier and it's out later, and it's barbecues and fun and friendship and things like that. But in the winter, at least in the UK where I live a lot of the time, and you've got 6 or 7 hours of sunlight, you know, you do your best to eat in those smaller windows, and it has a profound impact on your mood, your mental health, your metabolic health, you know, your weight. So many people are trying to, you know, micromanage their diet in so many ways. It's like, if only you knew that, like, aligning your circadian windows, aligning your light exposure, meant that your metabolism functioned better, that you burnt more fat, that you stored less fat for fuel, and then that your body composition, everyone wants to lose weight, right? Everyone wants to feel better, look better. And those things are as simple as making some of these circadian shifts. So that was not a small add to the end of that, but I felt like it was important.
No, absolutely incredible information. I think there's just so many gold points, tips for people to integrate. And I really love this habit stacking as well. It just makes so much sense for people when you tell them in this way. It's almost like the light switch goes on. They're like, oh, I can drink my water and my coffee and go outside, get my sunlight, get my grounding and stretch at the same time. What? It's like, wow. Yeah, you can. Yeah, absolutely. And so you can do it all at once, and that only takes 10 minutes, you know, great, start your day. So yeah, it's just thinking about things in a different way. It's changing perception. And I think this is where we've just been so stuck in a rut of thinking about a certain way of living. And now we're here on a mission to change that, which is absolutely incredible. Yeah, I did my thesis in appetite regulation in children last year. And the most interesting thing is we did it in more of a dyadic like response from the parents. And obviously what we as parents or caregivers, or, you know, we set an example. And so what we found in that is that you know, parental guidance in certain different ways really set children up for a different style of appetite regulation. But what I also found, as with any study that you do, I was like, well, we're missing regulating watching the ghrelin and the leptin. We haven't even got the light environment under control in these certain circumstances. Like, there's so much more now we need to research in relation to appetite regulation in children and even babies. So it's just a really exciting time, and there's so many more studies being done on this, and we are just knowing that this is not the woo-woo like it used to be 15 years ago. It all is solid. As we say, it's an area of science now. It is absolutely incredible. So exciting. So for you guys, you've got an incredible mission ahead of you, and also some really exciting times and things that you're creating, and I know, you know, that the passion behind it, I can hear it with just loving what you guys are doing. So finally, before I take too much of your time, which I am so grateful for today, thank you so much. And I know it's late where you guys are. I can see, you know, you've got the red lights, I've got the bright lights. We're at different ends of the day at the moment. But for those who are listening, where can they find you? What can they look forward to? Anything that you can give as a sneak peek of what else you might have come in to look out for? All that information would be fabulous.
Sure. Well, I'll touch the home bases and then Jay can give you the sneaky peekies. Our website is inrhythm.earth. You'll also find us at inrhythm.earth on most socials. So on Facebook, on Instagram, on TikTok, we have a little bit of content. On X, we're sort of going to be getting there soon. Both Jay and I are on LinkedIn, and I think the best thing we can do in terms of that is putting some stuff in the show notes. Both of us, you know, regularly post, share the latest research, our understandings, you know, our growing and developing thesis. There is a lot, you know, I'll let Jay speak to that, happening but behind the scenes, a lot that we can't disclose right now, but a lot that we are beginning to trickle out into the mainstream more and more. So yeah, coming and finding us on social media, you know, heading over to the website inrhythm.earth. There you'll see we have a lifestyle education program called Life in Rhythm. We've got the Better Sleep Bulb. We've got just more fundamental education, free education on the website regarding circadian science and looking at the research papers and looking at really, well, it's equivalent of, you know, sticking into your mobile phone, Siri, what is circadian science? You know, you don't need Siri for it. Come over to our website and you'll learn a little bit there. And then I'll let Jay tell you a little bit more about some of the things that he does and also the sort of the direction that we're going in.
Yeah, I also run a blog on Substack called The Story of Light, where I explore all things relating to light, connection, consciousness, spirituality, and the evolution of the human species. So do check that out if that's interesting to you. Kind of builds on the scientific grounding of everything we do in Rhythm and derives more sort of spiritual and philosophical meaning from it as well. Look, what does the future hold? I think the future is exciting, and I think the future is really positive. Once every 100 years, society gets together and realizes that something in the environment is amiss. Either something is present that shouldn't be present, like a pathogen, or something is absent, right? We saw this in the 1850s with cholera and dysentery, where we came together as a civilization and said, pathogens in the water, we can't have that. Dr. Snow, very famous story about the water pump in Soho. And then, a few years later, that was mandated. And, you know, clean water sanitation just is infrastructure now, right? It just happens quietly in the background. You're not even aware of it. Similar thing happens with nutritional science. Similar things happens with the advent of vaccinations and the reduction in child mortality. But the key thing is this: when society realizes that there is a common environmental stressor or error that is causing a bottleneck or some kind of friction on human health, we build infrastructure. We don't build consumer products. Okay, what that means is, We build systems architecture, right? We build, we effectively build, in this case, environments that are supportive to human health at scale. And we view this as the next layer of civilizational infrastructure, biologically coherent environments, where we use the circadian science to bring all of that you know, scientific and natural wisdom indoors, to have environments that are supportive to human health and the onset of eventual chronic disease. So these are environments that are effectively living, breathing organisms in and of themselves that are constantly responding to the chaotic the chaotic sort of, you know, footfall and chaotic human behavior within the environment, but maintains that cohesive environmental coherence that's supportive to human health. So we want to see every indoor environment in the world become biologically coherent. That's the mission that we're on, and we won't stop until we've got there or made a big dent in it. But this is a problem that's bigger than one company, right? This is going to take a lot of people, grassroots movements, regulation, governments, and a real global effort to change perspectives and to realize this dream of optimal human health. So we've got energy, we're inspired, and that's what we're running at.
Yeah, I think the last thing I would add to that is that, you know, so we have the version one bulb at the moment. You know, in the short to midterm, we're developing you know, more fixtures, more fittings, things that can more appropriately support consumers at the moment to kit out their homes. You know, depending where you are in the world, if you're in Australia or New Zealand, you know, downlights are a big thing. If you're in the UK, it's more of a bayonet, you know, regular bulb fitting. You know, all over the world, there's different things, and we want to be able to provide products and transform, you know, the indoor light environment using these newly emerging LED technologies, because there really is nothing like it. So it's just a case of, you know, how can we ensure that everybody can experience it in some way, shape. So yeah, just following along with us on that journey, and if we don't have the perfect product for your home right now, there's a good chance that we might in the months to come.
So exciting. I love all this. I can't wait to see it in gyms, in schools, in work environments, because they are the biggest things that are impacting, well, everything is, but if we can have it in these commercial environments and these learning environments, that is going to optimize the way that we are living, learning, and thriving. You know, as you said right at the start, Jay, we are really in this low vitality state because we are not living in line with nature, in rhythm with nature. So I thank you both, Dan, Jay, so much for your time today and your knowledge. And it really shows that you have an unending passion for this, and you are going to make waves. And I'm so excited to check in and watch where you get to and continue to get to. So thank you so much for today.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thanks so much, Jodie.
Thanks for listening to the Revital Health Podcast. We hope you enjoy this episode. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Revital Health, as well as our website, revitalhealth.com.au, for upcoming podcasts, workshops, and speaking events. Find out about specials happening in the clinic and all the show notes and links mentioned in the podcast. Please remember that this information discussed here is general information and is not intended to diagnose or treat individuals. Please speak to your healthcare professional before embarking on any new treatments, lifestyle changes, medicines, or supplementation to assess your suitability. Have a wonderful day, and we'll see you again soon.